Continuing the study of the capitalized terms for God in Science and Health. Summary of the fourth chapter, Christian Science versus Spiritualism, from the standpoint of the capitalized synonymous terms which pervade this chapter. Gordon Brown, London, April 1971.
So here we are with our books open at page 70, ready to try to summarize what we have learnt from our recent study of Christian Science versus Spiritualism. Now, we each have the capitalized terms marked throughout the chapter, haven't we? So that we see at a glance just where these terms occur in a paragraph or on a page, and what the terms are as they flow from one to the other throughout the text. Each with its individual meaning and value, but all necessarily operating in relation to one another. Now, our purpose in this work, isn't it, is that like Jesus, our thought shall begin to come forth from the Father. That we shall be sent forth by the divine principle of the universe, from the depths of this principle's own infinite being. And this, in science, is represented by our coming forth from the depths of the meaning of science and health, based on the system of synonymous capitalized terms for God: mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, the seven, Word, Christ, Christianity, science, the four, including those different aspects of the fourth term, science, the general term, science by itself, and the specific terms, divine science and Christian science. Christian science being used both in its absolute sense as absolute Christian science and in its applied sense when it is seen to be solving divinely the human problem of mortality, healing, and transforming humanity. Now, I feel that these capitalized terms should begin to shine out of their surrounding environmental, uncapitalized setting within the text, like the stars in the night sky. This, I think, is quite an apt symbol, particularly with regard to the subjects of the fourth and fifth chapters, because in the measure that our thought comes forth from the heavens, from the heavens of what these terms stand for, then it is not coming forth from the dark, bottomless recesses of what the psychoanalysts call the cosmic or collective unconscious human mind. And this means to say that the whole proposition of primitive astrological mythology as the unconscious, involuntary, uncontrollable determinant of our conscious human experience is being held in subjection, translated into the eternal science of our being. Now, let us remember that it was in the year 1910, the final year of Mrs. Eddy's mission, that the last two changes were made to the text of Science and Health, and that these were to the titles of the fourth and fifth chapters. Up to 1910, the fourth chapter had been called Christian Science and Spiritualism, and the fifth had been called Animal Magnetism. Then, in 1910, these were changed to Christian Science versus Spiritualism, and Animal Magnetism Unmasked. The lesson this teaches us is surely that as long as we have Christian Science and spiritualism in our thought, we are liable to have animal magnetism there too. But as soon as we understand the meaning of Christian Science versus spiritualism, then we have animal magnetism unmasked. For the word versus, from the Latin root vertere, to turn, as for example in the words reverse, inverse, universe, and so on, signifies that all there is to spiritualism is the suppositional reverse of Christian Science, and that Christian Science itself is the complete reversal of everything that spiritualism signifies, and therefore that Christian Science reaches out and reverses this reverse concept, swallows it up, as it were, as light swallows up darkness, translates it into itself. In other words, there aren't two entities fighting against each other, such as is suggested by Christian Science and spiritualism, but one only. And this one, Christian Science. And once this is understood, then animal magnetism can no longer deceive us with its pretensions and simulations, but is unmasked. Its forever nothingness stands revealed. Now, very briefly, let us just outline the purpose of the textbook's opening chapters as this has revealed itself to us, in order to get the fourth chapter within the general perspective. When we open our hearts in prayer, that's the first chapter, to that exemplary Christ Jesus standpoint of the total at-one-ment of everything in the universe with everything else, that's the second chapter, then this divine sense of wedlock handles the proposition of mortal birth in the third chapter, marriage, and the complementary proposition of mortal death in the fourth chapter, Christian Science versus Spiritualism. This means the total unmasking of basic animal magnetism in the fifth chapter, so that there is nothing then to stop the natural, spontaneous self-revelation of truth itself taking place in and as the consciousness of each one of us, as signified by the sixth chapter, Science, Theology, Medicine. All right, then. We turn to the 29 pages of the text of this tremendous fourth chapter, basing our thought all the time on the use of the capitalized synonymous terms as signifying the divine impulsion behind everything that is going on, every topic that is being discussed throughout the chapter. In the realm of the seven, the terms are dominated by spirit, as we would probably expect. 51 references to spirit, far more than to any other of the seven terms. And in the realm of the four, dominated by the term science. Science unqualified. 35 references to science by itself, far more than to any other of the four terms. Now, what might this signify? that fundamentally we only really understand science. We are only really in science, as the text keeps putting it, in the measure that we understand spirit. And in the measure that we really understand spirit, this is the science of our own true being. Now, as we follow the unfolding ideas revealed by the terms, let us not lose sight of those notebooks that we are keeping. The one where we are making our notes on the flow of the ideas from term to term, where the terms are flowing together in relationship one with another, and the other where we are noting down and building up our findings on the meanings and values of the individual terms themselves. Well, there they are on page 70. Christian Science on line 4, Truth on line 5, Spirit on lines 6 and 7, Spirit also in the marginal heading, Mind on line 12, and Soul on line 15. Got them? That marvelous first marginal heading, the infinite one spirit. That's the key to it all. Well, the first thing we are told relative to the capitalized terms is that on line 4, the revelations of Christian Science unlock the treasures of truth. And what treasures of truth this chapter brings to light, doesn't it? The revelations of Christian Science are the treasures of truth, and vice versa. Why then do we need two terms? The thing is that through the revelations of Christian Science, we actually get at, unlock truth treasures. Christian Science is our means of understanding what truth actually is. How different, then, are the revelations of Christian Science, the treasures of truth, from the testimony of the corporeal senses on line 2. The revelations of Christian Science, the treasures of truth, inform us what is real and what is delusive. But the testimony of the corporeal senses can't do this. And when this happens, then mortal existence on line 1 is no longer an inexplicable enigma, and no day is any longer a mystery. We come on line 6 to the reference to spirit. Christian Science, the infinite as Christian Science, is truth. And this truth is spirit. Now, the term spirit here is symbolized by the word atmosphere, the atmosphere of spirit. Well, think of the atmosphere surrounding the earth, the sphere of air enveloping the earth. The earth is sort of nestling in the embrace of this surrounding atmosphere. Air, it's what we breathe. Spirare, to breathe. And there is but one spirit, the text says. Earth and its atmosphere, man and God. Earth held in the atmosphere of spirit, man held in God. Man is never God, but spiritual man made in God's likeness reflects God. That which is held in the atmosphere is the reflection, the likeness of spirit. In the scientific reflection, the ego and the father are inseparable. The ego of man, man's ego isn't man. Man's ego is God. The ego of the reflection of spirit, the likeness of spirit, is spirit. And the two are inseparable. Now, supposing that instead of there being this infinite one spirit, we entertain the supposition that spirit was broken up into spirits, line 10. Little s. These, of course, would be corporeal beings in the plural. You and me as spirits or corporeal beings, and good and evil spirits at that. Now, all this is a mistake. The only truth, the great treasure of truth in this opening paragraph, is that the infinite one spirit holds its own reflection, its own likeness within its own being, and that that is man. And yet, the idea of plurality has to be taken into account and assessed properly. And when we come to the second paragraph, we find it there. Christian Science, truth, spirit. We must now see that this infinite one spirit is divine mind. Just as spirit holds its own reflection, its own likeness within itself, as God holds man within himself, so the divine mind maintains all identities. The word maintain gives the feeling of holds in its hand, keeps possession of all identities. Lovely thought of the divine mind holding in its hand, keeping possession of all identities as they range from a blade of grass to a star as distinct and eternal. Even if the corporeal senses would declare that these identities range actually from a blade of material grass to a star, the fact is, in Christian Science, that these identities are really God's identities. And when we understand Christian Science versus spiritualism, then we shall find these identities as they really are, even if they look to corporeal sense as ranging from a blade of grass to a star. Now, the great question is, what are, therefore, God's identities? And in order to answer that question, we have to be able to answer the question, what is soul? So it is clear that the purpose of the term soul is to inform us the truth regarding identity, identities. Now, can we answer that question, what is soul? Well, let's begin to answer it by asking another question. And that question is, does life, little l, or soul, little s, exist in the thing formed? What is the thing formed? Well, of course, that's the identity. Has identity, God's identities, have they little lives, little souls of their own existing within them? Well, not according to the first paragraph. The thing formed, like the earth held in its atmosphere, man held in God, the likeness, the reflection of spirit held in spirit, is the very opposite of life or soul existing in identity, in the thing formed. The ego, the life, the soul of the thing formed is that which forms it. God, spirit, mind, soul. That's the life or soul of the thing formed. So, as we come up to the top of 71, we see that spirit, on line 1, is in fact God and his idea. Spirit isn't just God. It is God, but God is God and his idea. God is God and man. God is spirit that holds its own reflection, likeness within itself. That's spirit. And that's reality. Now in this little paragraph, evil can't enter into that situation. So it has no reality. Evil is neither person, place, nor thing. Thing, evil, is not a thing formed. It has no identity. It's simply a belief, an illusion of material sense. And the key to the whole situation would seem to come in this second paragraph on page 71. I think it's not too much to say that if we really, or in the measure that we understand what this little paragraph is teaching, really that the whole of the chapter begins to fall into place, be explained, make sense. Let's see if that is possibly true. Because here it is that the identity, or the idea, or if you go back on the first page, the reflection, the likeness, of all reality continues forever. But spirit, that is, the divine principle of all, is not in spirit's formations. That's the key, that spirit is not in spirit's formations. Life or soul does not exist in the thing formed. Spirit's formations exist, live in spirit, as the likeness, the idea, the reflection, the identity of spirit. but not vice versa. And as soon as we touch this idea understandingly, this is the divine principle of everything. This is the fundamental idea of principle, the principle governing the universe, that spirit is not in spirit's formations. Everything is going on in spirit, and nothing is going on outside spirit because there is no outside to spirit. And when we conceive this idea of the total withinness of spirit, that really is what the term soul means. And so the term soul comes again on line 7. Soul is synonymous with spirit, God, the creative, governing, infinite principle outside of finite form, naturally outside of finite form in the sense, in the belief of life or soul existing in the thing formed. That would be finite form. And that would be on the outside of spirit, never on the inside. That which is on the inside on line 9 are spirit's formations, the forms themselves. Reflecting soul, reflecting spirit, reflecting principle, and so on. Great thing is that there is no outside to spirit soul, and this is the principle of all being. Therefore, the belief of something being on the outside is the belief of finite form, corporeal beings, spirits, good and evil spirits, life or soul existing in the thing formed. Now, as we learn to come out from the capitalized terms in our study and attitude to the textbook and to life itself, we are finding that we are not on the outside of spirit striving and laboring to get inside, but are forever on the inside, within the infinitude of principle, spirit, principle, soul, in that paragraph. Now this next paragraph, with its heading Dream Lessons, is there, I suppose, because dreams seem to give useful lessons, teach useful lessons. It's so clear that with dreams, on line 13, that in dreams everything is a formation of thought rather than of matter. See, all identities are identities of divine mind. The lesson that dreams teach is that everything is a formation of thought, of so-called mind, little m, rather than of matter. Whether it's landscapes, men or women that appear in dreams, these are images on line 16 which mortal mind holds and evolves and which simulate mind, life and intelligence. Images in mortal mind. Translate that, and we come to the fact of immortal mind, where everything is image, likeness, idea, identity, living in immortal mind. Therefore, immortal mind, on line 20, is not in matter. For mind, capital M, to be in matter, of course, spirit would have to be in spirit's formations. If spirit were in spirit's formations, there wouldn't be any spirit. Everything would be matter. And you would then have the concept, mind in matter. But because spirit is not in spirit's formations, therefore immortal mind is not in matter. And this, on line 21, is the science of mind. In contrast to spiritualism. Spiritualism is the offspring of the physical senses. It's the belief of being on the outside of spirit, that there is identity on the outside of spirit, whereas in fact all is held within spirit. There is no sensuality. All that is sensuality, the testimony of the corporeal senses. On line 25, I never could believe in spiritualism. Who or what is that I? Is it just the personal ego of the author of Science and Health? Not really. She no more acknowledged a personal I as her ego than did Jesus. No. The ego in question, the I in question, is that on exactly the opposite page, back on 70, line 9, where the ego and the Father are inseparable. No, that I is really spirit itself. It's spirit that never could believe in spiritualism. Why could spirit never believe in spiritualism? Because spirit knows that it holds the infinitude of its own being within itself, that its formations live and move and have their being within spirit itself, and that spirit is not in its formations. If spirit were in its formations, that would be spiritualism. But spirit knows to the contrary, and therefore spirit, I, the I, never could believe in spiritualism. Therefore, at the bottom, on line 30, spiritualism would presuppose that spirit, which is ever infinite, is a corporeal being, a finite form. That is to say, that spirit is in spirit's formations, thereby making spirit a finite form. But this is a theory contrary to Christian Science. And so the chapter title is Christian Science versus Spiritualism, because Christian Science is the reversal of that belief of finite form, and therefore it reverses it. And in reversing it, solves the total problem of life in matter. Suppose life in matter. As we turn over to page 72 on line 1, we see that what we are concerned with is life itself. This is all life with a capital L. This is one spiritual existence. In corporeal sense, can take no cognizance of it. On line 3, what this amounts to is the divine principle of man, this life. And this divine principle of man is, it speaks. It speaks. It's speaking to us now. But it speaks through immortal sense. It doesn't speak through, on line 4 and 5, mortal material sense, which on line 4 is identical with material body. It speaks through immortal sense, and therefore immortal sense is in fact spiritual body, man himself, principle's own body of immortal sense. That is it through which principle speaks. If a material body, in other words, mortal material sense, were permeated by spirit, that body would disappear to mortal sense, would be deathless. Well, the body that lives in spirit, spirit's own body, is indeed permeated in the sense that it is the reflection of spirit, it is permeated by spirit, but that is an entirely different proposition to a material body being permeated by spirit and so disappearing to mortal sense. You take Jesus at the ascension, the senses looking on would say that the body has disappeared to mortal sense, is deathless because it's permeated by spirit. But that's not the truth of the situation. It's the very reverse of the truth. The truth is that to spirit, to the consciousness of Jesus, whose ego is spirit itself, the last vestige of belief of being a finite form outside of spirit has disappeared, and consciousness is wholly of the nature of spirit itself. Spirit never in its formations. And so all this becomes on line 7, communion with spirit. This is a great topic naturally throughout this chapter on spiritualism, of communion or communication. Spirit is in instant communion with itself. It is in instant communion with every constituent identity or formation which constitutes spirit. And therefore every identity is in instant communion with every other identity as the constitution of spirit. And this is spiritual life. So that a condition precedent to communion with spirit is the gain of spiritual life. But inasmuch as you and I are understanding that spirit is not in spirit's formations, this is spiritual life. And we are, in that measure, in communion with spirit. But material existence can never be in communion with spirit, because that, in belief, is on the outside of spirit and can never get inside. So this plurality of spirits on line 9, they are corporeal communicators. Now don't let us be corporeal communicators or believe that we are corporeal communicators. But let us understand our identity in terms of the formations of spirit within the infinitude of spirit and truly in communion, therefore, with spirit and therefore with each other. The one is darkness, the other is light. What we are concerned with all this on line 11 is absolute science. Of course this is absolute science. Absolute. No outside. No dependence on something outside itself. Spirit not in spirit's formations. That is absolute science. Everything held within spirit. That is absolute science. Specifically soul. On line 11, in absolute science, soul, holding its own infinitude within itself. That is the only truth giver to man. This is what gives truth to you and me at this moment. Soul, in absolute science. Because this is truth itself, on line 12. Destroying mortality and bringing to light immortality. Destroying darkness, bringing light. Immortality to light. And you get the great contrast, therefore, between mortal belief, the material sense of life and immortal truth, the spiritual sense of life, the tares and the wheat, which are not united by progress, but separated. See, we are walking on a knife edge. Whereas Christian Science versus spiritualism is teaching that there is only one thing going on, and that's Christian Science. And Christian Science swallows up and translates the concept spiritualism within itself, yet as two concepts. So Christian Science on the one hand, spiritualism on the other, everything on the inside of spirit on the one hand, the belief of finite form being on the outside of spirit on the other. Those two concepts are so in opposition to one another that they can never be united, but are always separate. In other words, on line 18, spirit is not made manifest through matter, which is the antipode of spirit. As we come down to the last paragraph on 72, the term on line 23 is science. Keeps recurring in science, in absolute science, in science, in spirit, in science. God good being ever present, it follows in divine logic that evil, a suppositional opposite of good, is never present. In science, individual good derived from God good, ever-present good, the infinite all in all, may flow from the departed to mortals. Evil is neither communicable nor scientific. But the departed, the concept of something departed, there's no science in that. No individual good can depart from the ever-present good, the good which is ever-present, the all-in-all. And therefore that which flows comes from the ever-presence, the individual good that has never departed. It's only the testimony of the corporeal senses which seems to testify to the possibility of something departing, as if spirit's formations could depart from the withinness of spirit, soul, to an outside, and then have to get back again. Impossible in science. And so nothing has ever departed from this infinite withinness of spirit, soul, which we are being taught and told about as we enter this fourth chapter. And of course, it's life again. This is life on 27. This is the reality of life. Life is really the medium through which truth passes to earth. Life, not a sinning earthly mortal subject to death, but life itself is that through which truth communicates with us as man. And spirit and matter can no more therefore commingle than fire and frost can. How ridiculous on 73 to suppose that man is one moment material on line 3 and tomorrow can be a spirit, line 5. The fact is that neither the one nor the other, line 6, is infinite spirit, for spirit is God, and man is his likeness. He doesn't change man's likeness from being material one moment and a spirit the next. He is the likeness of spirit, wherein there is no matter, because spirit is not in spirit's formations. And neither can one man as spirit control another man as matter. This would upset, on line 9, the individuality and the science of man. Of course it would. The individuality of man is that man is the likeness of spirit held within spirit. The science of man is that man is the likeness of spirit, the image of spirit held within spirit, and no possibility of departing from spirit to some other realm outside of spirit. God's spirit controls man. Spirit controls its own likeness, its own reflection. Mind controls its own idea. Soul controls its own identity. In this paragraph on page 11, it is the fact that spirit controls its own likeness, man. And this is the only attraction. So on line 15, spirit God does not commune with mortals or control them through electricity or any other form of matter. If it did, the divine order of omnipotent, omnipresent spirit would be destroyed, and the science of omnipotent, omnipresent spirit would be destroyed. The order and the science are wholly concerned with the fact that the communion is within the infinitude of spirit. God and man one, and this one is spirit. Total communion instantly throughout the infinitude of spirit. And this is the scientific opposite to the theory of electricity and any other form of matter. And so as you come down that page, this truth being voiced and taught through the capitalized terms is handling all this business of material bodies returning to dust, rising up as spiritual bodies, and so on. No. A material body no more becomes a spiritual body and then returns to being a material body, because no identity can ever depart from spirit, become matter outside of spirit, and then return into spirit again. Spirit holds its own formations forever within itself, and this is the divine, the scientific antidote to all spiritualistic theory. At the bottom of that page, it just continues to tell us that spirit and matter do not commune together. Science destroys the belief that spirit and matter commune together, because science is spirit. The onlyness of spirit, the purity of spirit, no dualism or mixture in science. Hence the relationship of science and the term spirit. The sensual cannot be made the mouthpiece of the spiritual on line 30. And as we come over to 74, to be on communicable terms with spirit on line 3, persons must be free from organic bodies. Well, in the measure that we understand that spirit is not in spirit's formations, but that all spirit's formations are held in spirit, then that is being free in that measure from organic body, and therefore being on communicable terms with spirit. And it is impossible to return, having once understood this, to the belief of being a corporeal organic body outside of spirit. And that is what these paragraphs are about. On line 20, such a backward transformation is impossible in science. Notice this quite frequent use of the word impossible relative to the unqualified term science. Such a backward transformation is impossible in science. And therefore, on line 29, in Christian science, because such a backward transformation is impossible in science, the general term science, therefore specifically in Christian science, there is never a retrograde step, never a return to positions outgrown. The general and the specific. The second paragraph. Such a belief, you see, on line 9, is gross materialism and is scientifically impossible. Such a backward transformation is impossible in science. Gross materialism, scientifically impossible, since to infinite spirit there can be no matter. No outside to spirit, no finite form, no spirit in its formations. But all formations, all identities, living and moving and held within the atmosphere of spirit. And what does this do? It raises the dead. What is the dead? The Adam dream, the deep sleep, the belief in the psychological, mythological, astrological, unconscious. How did Jesus raise Lazarus from the dead? I go that I may wake him out of sleep. Is that I, the personal Jesus? Not at all. It is spirit. Spirit wakes the human out of sleep by or through the understanding that spirit is not in spirit's formations. If spirit were in spirit's formations, then that would be the sleep. And the sleep doesn't wake itself up out of itself. It requires spirit, which is not in spirit's formations and never could be, to wake Lazarus out of sleep and therefore to raise the dead. As we come down to the bottom of that page, you get the, on line 30, a contrast between what seems to be two aspects of passing on. On line 30, it's this passing from one dream to another dream. Well, that is all within the spiritualistic, unconscious, Adamic dream, deep sleep sense of things, going from one dream to another. But on line 31 and 32, something very different, something that surely is beginning to happen right now in our own experience through this vision of the capitalized terms and what they mean, so that we are beginning our thought to come out from the capitalized terms instead of trying to get up to the capitalized terms. Then this is awakening from earth sleep to the grand verities of life. And departing from what? Departing from the belief that spirit is in spirit's formations. Departing from the belief of the Adam dream and the unconscious and all the rest of it, and the awakening to life. Now, how long is it going to be before departing in this way and awakening in this way, how long is it going to be before we begin to hear the glad welcome of those who have gone before? I don't know whether it's the prophets, Jesus, the apostles, Mrs. Eddy, John Dorley, and so on and so on and so on. Anyway, there aren't any departed. All identity is right here and now, held within the infinitude of spirit, as spirit's formations which spirit is not in, but which reflect spirit. Yes, on line 6, this is being. Not used to be or going to be, but being now and understood, and this is life. Life not infinite, but life not finite, but life infinite. God, universal good. Never, on line 9, in a finite form. No finite form. No spirit in its formations. But the understanding that spirit never entered matter. No birth for man into matter, therefore. No coming away from spirit into the flesh outside of spirit. And therefore never raised from matter. With the supposition of returning whence he came. Spirit never entered matter, and therefore was never raised from matter. Spirit remains spirit, and spirit's formations remain forever one with spirit, and there is no departure from spirit to matter, and therefore no departure from matter back to spirit. This is spiritual being. What on line 12? And man, on line 16, is therefore individual consciousness. And when we see him as individual consciousness, that is seeing him as idea, on line 17. As spirit's idea, not as matter. Spirit's reflection, spirit's likeness, soul's identity, mind's idea, characterized by the divine spirit as idea. And this, on line 19, is divine science. To be universally understood with its divine authority and its power, in which suffering, sinning, dying beliefs have no power over individual consciousness, man. It's life, this, 23. This is life. It's the perfect harmony and immortality of life, possessing unlimited divine beauty and goodness without a single bodily pleasure or pain. And that's what constitutes man. Man indestructible. Man whose being now, not used to be or going to be, not used to be spirit, matter for the time being, and then going to be spirit again later on, no. Whose being is spiritual, scientific and intact, sinless joy. A perfection, though, discernible only by those who have the final understanding of Christ in divine science. Christ, the total Son of God, the one complete and full expression of divinity. But in divine science, that oneness, not believed in, not just having faith in it, but understood scientifically, Christ in divine science, wherein there is no death, and that's the final. It's the finality of death. There's no finality to the understanding of Christ in divine science. It's the finality of the nothingness, of understanding the nothingness of death. That's the only finality, surely. So, It's the recognition of spirit and of infinity on line 32 that we are learning about. And it is that which we are reaching on line 6. And in reaching it, it becomes to us the science of being. Of being now. Being spirit now. The science of being spirit now. And what is this science of being? On line 10, see, until the science of being is reached, then on line 10, until the spiritual understanding of life is reached. The science of being then is the spiritual understanding of life. Science of being, little b, spiritual understanding of life, capital L. Great resurrection, rebirth, and therefore the second death having no power. Why is the second death no power? Because the resurrection is from the belief of the first death, namely birth into matter. But if we look back on 76, line 11, there it was that spirit never entered matter, was therefore never raised from matter, no birth, no death, therefore that is life, the spiritual understanding of life, in which the second death, the belief called death, has no power. Coming down to the bottom of 77, no capitalized terms after the term life there on line 10, and therefore it's the same theme being dealt with and explained and presented in different forms. But as we come down to the bottom of 77, then it's as if the concept spiritualism is in a measure contrasted with
spiritism. Please now turn the tape over and start again on the other side.